Okay, we're live now.
Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you don't never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm willing to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, races go. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
American,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb, instead of have your back, have you beat and lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time, getting up don't even really ever force your mind, you got porn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line, stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time, what we do to survive, is defined as a life of crime, you can't ball, then you forced to grind, if you fall, then you cross the line, and I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9, since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drugs, fellas. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
you know the black freedom movement, constitutional, moral conscious. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless, but we're our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the bus day banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
America, America. I guess that's where we have to start at tonight, ladies and gentlemen. You know, my name is James Cannon, and as we look at this and listen to this song, America, which is such a powerful song, brings so many powerful thoughts to our minds. You know, we look at America to provide for us Number one, ladies and gentlemen, opportunity. Opportunity to live, opportunity to breathe, opportunity to have due process, opportunity to be able to have set up entrepreneur endeavors in America to fend for ourselves. We look for reparations, ladies and gentlemen, but if we never get it, if we never get the reparations, we have an opportunity, because we're here in America, to at least assess the bootstraps that we have and then pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, by our own effort, by our own sweat equity that we put into our own ideals. Sometimes God may give you a $1 million ideal, but it's not going to come to pass until you put the sweat equity into it, until you burn the midnight oil and put the necessary study in to your craft or your trade in order to put it forth, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to take some effort to get the kite up into the sky. But once you get it up in the sky, ladies and gentlemen, that's your kite in the sky. You can fly it as high as your string will allow your kite to go. So tonight we talk about some important things. We talk about entrepreneurship. We talk about Black Wall Street. We talk about putting sweat equity into our dreams and visions and make it come to pass. And so as I pass on this show tonight, my name is James Cannon. I'm the co-captain of the ship. I want to pass on to and say welcome back to Dr. Tatum as he comes to the podium tonight and he takes us to the next level. Dr. Tatum is a powerful young man from the city of Bakersfield. And tonight we want to hear from him what's on his heart right before we bring our host back to the show. Dr. Lee, Dr. Tatum, I appreciate you tonight. I appreciate everything you're doing. Greet our audience tonight, Dr. Tatum, and in your own way, we appreciate you, sir.
All right. Minister James Cannon, for those of you who don't know, Mr. James Cannon is the father of entertainer Nick Cannon. He is the president of Nick Cannon Foundation. Nick Cannon is the ambassador of H.R. 1242, which is what we're working on to raise $1 billion-plus to help many like Dr. Mary Lee and others. The music you heard earlier by Dr. Carnell West called America, the music was produced by my old young Corey Coachy Tatum, and the first rapper was my son Jeremy Tatum, followed by Rod Digger and Black Thought. I'm glad to be back. I've been out a little bit, had a little situation, lost my mom, so yes, that God just continue to pray over her family. She was up in age. She's been with us for many years, so we're keeping up prayers as well as these family. So I'm glad to be back, part of the Dr. Mary Lee Live Show. We'll be talking about a Black Expo tonight. It's just time. I'm going to turn it over to Michael Tynes as he introduces Dr. Mary Lee. Once again, I'm glad to be back. Dr. Tatum from California.
Thank you, Mr. Tatum. Appreciate that. And my deepest condolences to you. As Mr. Tatum said, my name is Michael. I'm a fellow co-host of the show. And tonight's discussion will be centered around the topic of the Black Wall Street Entrepreneurship Expo 2021. We'll be speaking with Reverend Clarence Landry and Mr. Tony Fain. And we'll hopefully be able to facilitate a very substantive discussion centered around the topic of Black entrepreneurship. Last show we had some technical difficulties, but we're here again, back, hoping to facilitate discussion and, you know, get something educational out of it. But before we get into the discussion, I do want to bring on the main host of the show, Mrs. Dr. Mary Lee, so she can say her opening remarks and we can get into the discussion. So, Dr. Mary Lee, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so very much, Michael. I want our listening audience to know who are not familiar with Michael, that Michael is our young, well, to say youth, but young man, still in college, our youth researcher, and And Charlie J, he's just an amazing young man who does lots and lots of research on our topics and is very creative. Michael, I'd like for you to explain to our listening audience a little bit more about your projects that you've got going on. And he teaches for us just as an amazing young man. Michael, and then I'll come
yeah.
back.
Well, I don't know if I want to say too much about – I do have some more media projects. I was going to put out some more videos, some longer form videos. I don't know if I want to say too much about that before I actually put it out. But in short, I just, you know, someone who took it upon themselves to research a lot of things relating to African history, in particular, African genetic diversity. That's a big thing that I go into, genetics, the field of that. And I put a lot of videos relating to that on various media channels that I have, one of which is a YouTube channel. And I just try to facilitate substantive and scientific conversations for the community, specifically in regards to things like African genetic diversity and, you know, academic things like African history or Afrocentric history that centers more so on Africans and in world history. And I produce media videos relating to that on my various media channels. And as Dr. Lee said, I do have some things coming up. I'm not going to speak too much on them right now, but I'll probably do that in a follow-up show. But yeah, that's pretty much what I act as, community educator and an advocate.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Michael. Well, we're happy to be here. And again, I want to welcome Dr. Tatum back and again extend my sincere condolences. And we're definitely going to keep you in prayers as you go through this healing process. And tonight we're talking with, like we don't see Reverend Landry here yet tonight, but we're talking with Tony Fane, who is an investor, and then we have Donnie, who's also on, and Donnie Horner was on, and then we have Dr. Charles Champ Walker, who are our special guests tonight. I want to welcome all three of you. And we're talking about the Black Wall Street Entrepreneurs Expo, but we're also talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're talking about Oklahoma and the massacres. We're talking about history tonight. And as always, we want everyone to feel very comfortable in joining the conversation. All you need to do is tap one on your telephone, and your line will light up, and you will be acknowledged for a comment or a question. You can also, if you're not comfortable speaking, you can text questions to 571-998-1964. And if you're on the internet, you can go into the chat and leave a message. Well, if you're on the internet, you wouldn't be able to ask a question except for on the chat. So here again, we welcome you, and we're happy that you're here. Tony Fane is an investor, producer, and promoter. He is a serial entrepreneur with 40 years of experience in the marketing and entertainment industries. His company, OMS Marketing Group, Inc., specializes in business development and is currently encouraging the expansion of doggy-style hot dogs and My Free Move franchises in Oklahoma, Texas, and Georgia. Today, Tony Fane is a founding member of the Green Exchange Credit Union in historic Stockyard City, Oklahoma, and he partnered with Shira Homes, Inc., a shipping container home manufacturing facility based in Houston, Texas. He has also established a full-scale vertical cannabis operation, universal cultivation and distribution in Oklahoma and Colorado. As an extension of his interest in business development, Mr. Fain is launching the Black Wall Street Entrepreneur Expo in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, with a goal of mentoring and motivating the startup of 10,000 new businesses across the country. And that is where Neighborhood Commerce Institute comes in. The tour will travel to 9 additional cities, Dallas, Houston, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Miami, Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis, and Los Angeles. Let's welcome Tony Fain. Thank you for joining us, Tony.
Thank you for having me, Mary. Dr. Mary, I appreciate you for being here.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we're going to introduce, Donnie Horner to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go on to Dr. Walker. Donnie Horner.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, good deal. All right. My name's
Donnie
Moore.
Is a partner. Donnie is a partner. Okay, go ahead.
And just a little bit about me, real brief. We own a business, the Pillar Group, which is actually in the historic Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We are a full service insurance brokerage firm. Of course, partnering with Tony on a number of fronts with Greenwood Media, which is a PR firm focused on bringing different media services, you know, focused on the interests of minorities, which is, of course, partnering with the Black Expo. So I've been in business or in and around business all my life, a native of Tulsa, Oklahoma. My dad and grandfather and everybody pretty much in our family had business on Greenwood in the Tulsa area. My mom was a senator in the state of Oklahoma for over 18 years and actually was one of the founding members who actually went to Congress to get the, the reparations and or the Black Wall Street recognized for the massacre, for the 1921 race riot commission. That was one of her things that she did as one of the many contributions to our community that she did. So we're just pretty much ingrained in our entrepreneurship and wanting to help spread the good news about trying to be an entrepreneur. Of course, like with Tony, there's always something new. So we're excited to be a part of it and look forward to meeting you guys at some point and collaborating and learning more about some of the things that you guys are doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we will be back to you. Dr. Charles Kent Walker is the CEO of Bright Ideas, former co-founder and chair of Green Economy Diversity Initiative, one of the leading small and disadvantaged green business advocacy organizations in the nation, and a managing member of Greenhood Industries, LLC. He has held several executive positions in several fields, staffing, wastewater, apparel, entertainment, sports, and venture investing. Mr. Walker was the former COO of the Walker Group, one of the largest minority-owned companies in the Southeast. At the Walker Group, Dr. Walker led all restaurant staffing and courier operations. Under Mr. Walker's leadership, the firm grew from $2 million to $27 million. In 1994, Dr. Walker, at the age of 24, created an Afrocentric preppy clothing label called Heritage by Paris Walker that was sold in 13 major upscale department stores. After a run for Georgia's 12th congressional district as his Democratic nominee, the CEO of Ramar Apparel recruited Mr. Walker as president of Ramar Apparel and Entertainment. While there, Mr. Walker was responsible for developing major accounts such as NASCAR, Motown, Coca-Cola, Home Depot, and recruiting celebrity clients. In 1999, Mr. Walker founded and served as CEO of First Choice Supply, an industrial supply company that services the wastewater industry. Under his leadership, First Choice landed a $150 million contract to supply all industrial supplies to United Water, one of the largest wastewater concerns in the world. As a visionary, Mr. Walker was responsible for growing each of the aforementioned companies as head of business development through his extensive network of business and political associates. And there is so much, 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 much more here, up into the billions of dollars and capital that and investments that he's created. I want to welcome Dr. Charles Champ Walker. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're looking forward to hearing much more, Dr. Walker.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Thank you for your time. It's an absolute pleasure to join you all. I am currently the CEO of the Black Wall Street Card, and we have been blessed to be on the ground in Tulsa to work with organizations to provide the first credit debit gift card backed by the Black Wall Street Pledge, which is a pledge whereby people of color and brown people and friends of the movement make a secured pledge commitment to spend X amount of their annual income with black and brown businesses. Our card is backed by a technology platform that allows people through the card to support black and brown businesses. And if you can't find a product or service from a black or brown business, you do so from our allies. Our goal is to have 1 million people to take their weekly expenditures, monthly expenditures with minority entities, restaurants, farmers, doctors, lawyers, et cetera, people we buy from on a weekly basis, and pledge that amount within 365 days, and it's stored like on a gift card. If we had 1 million people spending $10,000 up front, stored up with 365 days to buy, we can create $10 billion, of which, because of the card and technology and data, we can report just like NASDAQ. We can report just like NASDAQ real-time spending and how we create wealth in our communities. So, you know, we know our people from Missouri, so we want to show them tangible mm-hmm. results that if we support each other, what we can do. The card has a multitude of loyalty and rewards programs. We get discounts to minority businesses. We have an e-mall for merchants. We partner with the Black 411, and we're pretty much sharing the secrets and testimony of the highly successful Wall Street, and we consider ourselves the digital blueprint of the Black Wall Street. And so the card represents an ecosystem where we'll be launching in cities, municipalities around the country with Black Expo, highlighting black businesses that has the infrastructure so that when we make a bold call to action and put this card into the hands of people who recognize that every time they spend a dollar, they're creating wealth in their community, we can create companies and show our people what can be done if we practice what Black Wall Street did back then, and that is recirculate our dollars. So we made it convenient for people to do so with that company that is backing up their very aggressive blockchain POS system company, and we're very proud to partner with the Black Wall Street Expo as we empower businesses and people to go to businesses and ask them, have they signed up? I have my card. I've made a pledge. We want to support you, but you're not on our list. would you consider? And so we're creating warriors in a very organic movement, and our firm belief is simply this. We've marched, we voted, but it's now time to put your money where the movement is. And that's pretty much our spiel.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. We will be back. There will be questions. But we're going to go back to Tony Thain, who's going to share more with us about the Black Wall Street. Now, I'm sitting in the middle of a storm. My lights just went out. My power is just gone. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to last up here. But let's continue on. I'm going to try to. That means my internet is out too. Okay, so James, I need you guys to be able to kick in here and keep this going just in case my power doesn't come back on. So let's go. We want to talk about the history tonight. And Tech, I hope that you hear me and understand that my power is not working, which means I'm going to lose internet here.
I think if you open up everybody's mic that you want to. I think if you open
up
everybody's mic.
We're going to open up everyone's mic.
Yeah, then if your power goes down, I think the system will still be up.
Tech is on. I might not be able to be on here. I may need to go to, oh, this here is all I need right now. But at any rate, go ahead, Tony. And
okay.
You guys hang in there if you lose me, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead. All your lines are open.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Dr. Lee, for having us on your platform this evening to discuss the Black Wall Street Expo. And just to give you guys a little insight on what made me decide to do this. This is not something that we just decided to do overnight. This is a project that I've been working on for the last 7 years. And the reason why it's taken so long is that a gentleman that I started out working with by the name of Bill Sherry ended up passing in the midst of us actually putting together the expo. And in the process of doing that, that kind of took a lot of momentum from me in terms of, you know, just doing it alone. But I knew that the 100-year anniversary was coming around in 2021. So I decided to just put everything on hold and to roll everything out during the 100-year centennial of the Black Wall Street Memorial. So we decided to roll everything out this year. And what we really wanted to focus on is not just the expo, but I feel as though in a lot of communities, just like in the city in which I'm from, which is Oklahoma City, I've been gone for 30 years and coming back to Oklahoma, the side of town that I grew up on, which is considered the east side of Oklahoma, which is where all the blacks live, you know, is no longer the black side of town. And not only is it not the blacks out of town anymore, there's no black businesses that exist. You know, there's only a handful of black businesses that exist in it. So I'm a business owner myself. I came back to Oklahoma during the pandemic to take care of my mom. And while I moved back, I decided to start a few businesses. So we started a hot dog, gourmet hot dog franchise here called Doggy Style Hot Dogs. And with that being said, you know, the hot dog business is doing so well, we decided to open up in three other markets. So with that going on, we also decided that in this market, there's no minority ad agency in the state of Oklahoma, because when I came here, I was needing to do some advertisement, and I got to looking, and I realized that a city the size of Oklahoma is sad that it was hard that I couldn't find a minority company that actually I could buy advertising from. So I contacted one of my good friends from Tulsa, which is the brother on the phone by the name of Donnie Horner. Me and Donnie have a long history of knowing one another. We both started in the entertainment business. And I was telling Donnie, you know, coming home, you know, we don't have there's certain businesses that we're missing. And those businesses are really key in terms of how companies spend their money in the black community. So I'm like, if there's no gatekeepers collecting the money, how are we getting the money funneled into our communities if we don't have black ad agencies? So instead of sitting back realizing there was a problem, what we did is decided to fix the problem by starting the Dreamwood Ad Agency, which is an agency in which we came together with a few other brothers that's in the marketing promotional industry that's well established, and we developed a company that actually filled the void. And we needed a platform to not only attach ourselves to, but we wanted to create a vehicle that we could brand Dreamwood on a national level. So I decided let's use the Black Wall Street Expo as that vehicle and introduce ourselves to the world through the expo. But at the same time, we're able to build relationships with other brands and other companies throughout the country in the process of building the expo. And our goal is to help keep the money in the community. And that was one of the things, like Charles said, what made Black Wall Street so successful is that blacks used to barter. You know, it wasn't always about spending money with each other. It was about trading services, time, ideas, and resources. And that's what we decided to do, was to complement and build each other's brands and utilize each other's resources. So with the expo, we were able to partner with brothers like Charles Walker, who's created a blueprint that's dealing with the e-commerce. And everything that we're doing, it definitely centers around e-commerce. So with our goal of wanting to establish 1,000 minority businesses in each city we go to, I feel as though it was always good to find vehicles and different partnerships that fit the model that the Black Wall Street Expo represented and what he was doing with the Black Wall Street card. It was definitely a no-brainer in terms of building that tie-in and that bridge. So, you know, it's just one of those things now to where our goal is to create not only an economic movement, but a situation where a lot of people that have businesses who don't know how to start businesses can have a vehicle or an outlet that they can tie into and get the resources that's not out there on an everyday basis. So this is our goal in terms of just giving information, providing resources, and giving people an opportunity to showcase their product, their services, and just help build their brands. Because, you know, us as black folks, we don't know who's doing what these days. There's a lot of folks out there that have businesses, that have ideas and models that we don't know about. So I don't think there's enough vehicles out there that we can really look at to say, I own a painting company, but no one knows because I can't afford to buy radio that I exist. So what other way can I promote my company if I don't have the money to buy mainstream radio, or if I don't have the money to have an ad campaign? There's a lot of people that have businesses but don't have outlets to expose those businesses. So with these type of vehicles, we want to be able to help all those small businesses become middle, let's just say middle-sized businesses rather than small, and make the middle-sized businesses large businesses through just exposure.
That's great.
Can you hear me, Dr.
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I can. Okay,
Dr. Lee,
I'm on.
I actually had a question I wanted to ask just before
Okay, go ahead.
I was curious just to ask the gentleman, what's been the most challenging obstacle or obstacles that you've come across with trying to get black people to support other black businesses? And what, if any, solutions would you be able to offer to ameliorate those problems?
Well, I think that, you know, the biggest problem that I've faced in dealing with just us is trust. We don't know how to trust each other anymore. And not only that, I feel as though not only do we have a trust issue, we have an issue to where, you know, we don't want, we expect more than what we're willing to give with most folks.
You're saying the subconscious standards black people have for other black people is higher than the standards they have for, like, other white people or Asian people in their businesses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our expectation level is a lot higher when it comes to dealing with each other than what it is dealing with anyone else. We definitely expect more from...
I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm curious because I know you're in this space and you have a lot of knowledge about entrepreneurship and experience. Do you think that may be one of the ways to undo this programming? Because that is, you know, programming that was put into us that we didn't just, you know, because we, like you said, during the days of Black Wall Street, it's completely opposite of today. We did trust one another, so that was programming. But do you think that maybe more exposure, if black people get more exposure to kind of, you know, not to throw any specific person or group under the bus here, but there are a lot of Asian businesses, especially in the restaurant industry, that don't usually and aren't usually known for having the highest, you know, quality standards or, you know, passing health inspections, but still pass it anyway because of maybe some money out on the table or for other political reasons. Do you think that maybe if people started to collect information that the media doesn't report about other groups and their businesses not being as high quality as black people think, black people started to realize this, you think that can maybe cause black people to say, oh, wait a minute, these businesses aren't as, you know, high quality as we thought? A lot of this has been propaganda. Do you think if people were to collect information about different businesses kind of being exposed for what they really were, different non-black businesses, that would make black people, you know, second guess just how high quality these other businesses are and maybe cause them to not hold black businesses to such a higher unrealistic standard? What would you say?
You know, something that's an interesting question. And one of the things that I realized when we did start a business is that, you know, I could have started a business on the east side and, you know, I'm sure that, you know, I would have did well. But I knew that in the space that I was going into, which is really unfamiliar territory because there's not a lot of businesses that specialize in the hot dog brand, I wanted to go in an area which I decided to go into a suburban area, which Edmond, Oklahoma is considered kind of like high rent district in terms of real estate. So I wanted to know that by me, if I opened a business and I catered, let's just say, toward the other market, if I can compete or if I can succeed on the level with a McDonald's, a Burger King, a Wendy's, or any of the other franchises that were doing well. So I decided to jump into deep water. So what we decided to do was to go after the big fish. And I must say, after my first year in business, we're one of the only five-star gourmet franchise restaurants, not only in the state but in the country, that services fast food. So with that being said, you know, I believe the customer service and the quality and everything you just mentioned, the quality of the food, the service and everything is very important. And I think if you treat everybody the way you want to be treated when you go out and order a diet to a restaurant, I think that you know, everybody can get good results, especially if you know how to treat people.
Absolutely.
If you Google doggy style hot dogs and just look at the ratings, you know, everything I'm telling you, it speaks for itself.
Absolutely. And the only reason I brought that up is because that's just something that's always stuck with me, because you see the ramifications of that programming all the time. And a lot of black people may not even realize how overly critical they are of other black businesses when they talk. And I always just thought that, you know, for instance, if you have, like, hypothetically two businesses, one black and one Asian, and the Asians sell tilapia that they're pretending is salmon and the black people actually salmon, I was just wondering, I was just thinking, if the black people knew that tilapia wasn't salmon, it was tilapia, maybe they wouldn't, you know, fight so hard to get into the Asian restaurant and pay more for it. Maybe they'd realize, oh, wait a minute, this is this is tilapia. The other black business sells real salmon. We're not going to pay for that as much. I think that, you know, because they can't recognize the difference between salmon and tilapia, they end up paying for tilapia thinking it's salmon. So maybe, you know, maybe if they were disillusioned, if they had information about the inside of the industry and, you know, all that glitters isn't gold, so to speak, that maybe that would kind of break the spell.
Well, I think that's an interesting point as well. And I think it goes back to what you just said. I think a lot of people don't give us credit for knowing quality. And I was just reading an article not too long ago about a young rapper who bought a Patek Philippe watch, a little guy by the name of Lil Baby. And the jeweler stole him a fake watch, thinking that he wouldn't know the difference. And when he called the jeweler out, which this is a very high-end jeweler, this is a company that's well-established that a lot of celebrities buy from, but since this guy was a young guy that was a rapper, they just assumed we could sell him a bunch of fool's gold, and he would never know the difference. And he put him on blast. So, you know, it goes back to, like you said, you know, information is something that has been hid from us for so long, and I think we're in a market now to where a lot of young blacks don't want to take orders, and they don't want to work for anybody these days. And I think the days of people looking for jobs, those days are becoming very far in between, because I think COVID has had people to reevaluate the whole work market. So I think this timing of what we're doing with this expo, I think the timing is really good in terms of getting people to start thinking about having businesses. I'm not saying don't have a job, but I'm just saying I think everybody out here needs to own a business, you know, some sort. And I think that if we can get more people to start setting up LLCs and incorporations, I think that's the first step in building this new Black Wall Street that I feel like can easily be built. We just need more people to stop becoming workers and start becoming more entrepreneurial minded.
Absolutely.
I like to say,
I think the days of going to school, like getting a good education, getting a job is over with now.
Yeah,
I feel like we have been taught wrong.
Can you guys hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay, because I'm sitting here with candles, and I don't know how long my batteries are going to last. But you know, as you were speaking about the time is right for the expo and entrepreneurship being taught, due to an awakening that is happening amongst our youth in particular, particularly we're seeing a resistance, you know, like with the Black Lives Matter, with George Floyd's killing, you know, that was like a pivotal point where our youth were already resisting. And I think that resistance is good with the right mindset, and with guidance. You know, you need wisdom. And so we're here to teach, you know, to help our youth to go into business. One thing that they absolutely don't want to do, and you just said it, is work for anyone. They don't want to work for a white man. And they will tell you. They will tell you point blank, because there is an awareness, there's an awakening that is happening amongst our young people. And myself, even, you know, youth have a measure of resistance to begin with. I mean, as our kids start getting older and they start realizing that they're not like their parents, you know, the resistance or the individuality or self-identity start kicking in. And
absolutely.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Dr. Lee.
Believe it or not, Dr. Lee, I've seen it for myself a lot. When governments have to pay people to go back to work, it lets you know that people don't want jobs these days.
No. And they won't even, you can't even pay them to go back some of them, you can't pay them to go back to work. And with the COVID, with what's happening right now, we're so accustomed to all of these experiments as a people, we don't have any trust. I mean, I can't say I have any trust in anything that they're doing or any one of them out there, honestly. You know, so we are learning to take care of our own health, to take care of our own finances, to figure out ways, develop ways of entrepreneurship, you know, of feeding ourselves and finding our own finances. And I think this is absolutely essential in this day. We weren't created to work on a job anyway, were we? I think that came along with the Rothschilds and this 100-plus-year system that we're living under. You know, even the schools were set up in order to develop workers, laborers, not entrepreneurs, but I believe that within us, we were all created to trade, you know, to trade with one another, to barter with one another. You know, the land was already ours. And so the time is absolutely right. And, yes, we can have our schools and our universities so that we can teach our children, you know, true history. So we can teach our children who they are, who we are. And because we're the ones who created everything from the very beginning. It was just so much.
You know something, Dr. Lee, it's amazing that when you think about Black Wall Street and everything that was accomplished back in those days, you had over 600 black businesses in one city in a 36-block radius. And today, you go to that same area. I don't know how many businesses are in Tulsa at the moment, but it's nowhere near 600.
Right.
I'm wondering if you got 100 black businesses in Tulsa today. You know, and I'm saying there's no reason why today, with the education level, with the financial resources we have available to us, that we don't have it's three times the amount of businesses that we had back then today.
Absolutely. There's no reason why we cannot have, and the reason being is that we as a people have been brainwashed, whitewashed, and
right,
stripped.
That we're scared to start a business. We feel as though by starting a business, we have to be successful. If not, you know, I don't know if we're scared of failure. You know, most people don't want to take the risk of having the responsibility and to have to do for themselves. So they just decide, let me get a check and take the easy route out. But for whatever it is, you know, I feel like if you can work at the restaurant, you can own the restaurant.
That's right.
You know, the only difference between the owner and the worker is an EIN number and a tax ID number. So I'm like, you know, it's just people don't have the information to know better.
They don't have the information.
That's beautiful, Doctor. This is Mr. Cannon. And looking at the structure of franchises in this country, as many different franchises that they are across this country, the mindset that you had to have to set up a company where you can franchise, that's a different level structure of business mindset.
Absolutely.
What type
Absolutely.
Of mindset did you get? Should we do that starting out, starting a business that can be franchised and
Boy,
then grow
great,
it
great
that
question.
Way? Or do you just
great.
Surprisingly just, since you're doing so great, just then decide to franchise? Should you start from the beginning with an ideal that can be franchisable? Yours sounds very simple. How can we get that mindset to start with something simple like hot dogs, but then can grow that bad boy to where you can have one all over the country?
That's a great, excellent question, my brother. And believe it or not, you know, it's a lot of my friends know me for being in the entertainment business. You know, I've had a lot of great success in a lot of other areas of business, And I feel as though when you hot, you hot. And, you know, my calling, I thought, you know, was being an athlete. You know, I felt as though I had just as good a chance of becoming a pro athlete as anybody else. But for whatever reason, God had other plans. So I took the route of going into the music business. And just to give you guys a little background on myself, I started in the music business managing a roommate. And my roommate wrote a record by the name of Ice Ice Baby.
Okay.
And that record became one of the biggest records in hip hop. And it showed me that, you know, if I can spot talent that can create that type of product, I can do pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. And from there, I took my marketing skills, and I started doing stage plays. I started working with a gentleman by the name of Shelly Garrett, which we put out the plays Beauty Shop and Barbershop.
Okay.
So I've had I've been blessed to work with a lot of great people. And as far as the theater business, I feel as though I had an opportunity to play the theater game at the highest level that you could play it. Beauty Shop is probably one of the biggest plays that ever toured in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And and by me being Shelly's tour promoter, I was able to get a lot of the experience working with one of the greatest. So I've had a lot of great opportunities. When you said the distort your own brand, I've always been a person, instead of buying a McDonald's, I wanted to be McDonald's.
Okay.
And I realized if they could build a brand like a McDonald's, and all they had to build it on was a Big Mac, all you needed was a franchise product. So I feel as though the same way they marketed a Big Mac, I could market something that was unique, what I had. So I took the same model, and I feel as though it takes one. You got to sell them one at a time. That was the goal of McDonald's. They sold one Big Mac at a time. And I remember back in the day as a kid, I used to always ride by McDonald's. I don't know if you guys remember. They would have on the sign, 1 million sold.
1 million sold.
Right.
You might go by there next week and it'd say 5 million sold. So
right.
With that being said, I've seen them go from 1 million sold to 5 million to 1 billion. With a Big Mac, and the product that I had that I put up against the Big Mac was a hot dog called the Creole Dog. And I asked myself, if I had $10, would I buy a Big Mac or a Creole Dog? And I did my own research, and I asked 10 people the same question. And I realized I had a better product than McDonald's. So the only difference between me and McDonald's is that more people knew McDonald's than knew me. So I've always been a person where I've never been scared to go against the traffic. I've always been a person that's been a trailblazer. I feel as though if McDonald's can do it, why the same God that blessed McDonald's, the same God that can bless me.
That's powerful.
Right, right. And, you know, I'm of the mindset that and also responding to your question, Dr. Cannon, about franchising. Do you franchise right away? Franchising and affiliates, I'm of the mindset Uber didn't do one at a time. By the time when Uber launched, Uber launched with thousands and thousands of drivers already signed up, already ready to go. This is the reason they made the impact they did. Same thing with Airbnb, because I'm of the mindset whether it's your gourmet hot dogs, whether it's the credit cards or the neighborhood commerce, philanthropy and grant development, ever each one of our visions are, or anyone's vision, they never start with just one. And all we have to do is to find others who are interested in doing the same thing. The expo that's mm-hmm. coming up right now is an ideal vehicle.
And that's exactly what we're there for. That's
To go from state to state, collect the interest.
You're absolutely right.
Find out who wants to do what.
Absolutely.
And we sign them up. We do it. We get them ready, you know, from state to state. We don't care what type of business it is because we have all are organized by the same principles. And if someone wants to do hot dogs and don't know what to do, then we establish an affiliate and then let them still go into business underneath our names, with a license to operate. This is how it's done. And this is what we want to get out there to our people.
And that's exactly, you're absolutely right, Dr. Lee. And that was my goal of doing the Doggy Style Hot Dog. I didn't do this just to do it for me. I did it just so I could. There's a lot of folks out there that want to go into business but don't know exactly what they want to do. And they might not can afford a McDonald's or a Subway, a Wendy's, a Burger King, because they ask for a lot of money and they ask for a lot of credit. And that's something that most blacks, so that's going to count out 99% of the black folks that want to start a restaurant. So by us having our own brand, we can actually work with people that might have challenge credit or might not have nothing but enough money to get the store open. We can partner with them.
Yep.
As long as they're willing to work and put the equity in, you know, they don't have to necessarily have all the money.
Right.
So those are the kind of things that we can offer that most people won't offer people that want to start a business. They want you to have all the money. You know,
well,
we can work with them.
They do. See, white people, and I'm black as black can get, okay? So I work with them. I know how they operate. White people, Asians, any other nation of people can come in, get their businesses organized, get what they need for their businesses. They don't have to have any credit. They fix it for them. But just like with housing, they use credit. They use, income. They use all of these different avenues to redline us out. This is what they do. I've been there. I've seen it. And I don't care what type of business it is. You can go and apply for an apartment. You and a white person with the same 450 score credit and bankrupt and low income, the white person, they'll make concessions for. Oh, they'll do things very creative, like, your income is $300 a month. Do you think that your sister or your brother would gift you $1,000 a month and then verify it? That's the kind of thing that they do. I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Quite frankly,
well, that's called cosigner. They do let you bring in cosigner.
Yeah. Right. But then sometimes they will allow, now they'll allow them co-signers, but sometimes they just will allow a statement, an income statement.
Right.
Saying from a parent or a friend that they will give them that much money every month, and they will use that to allow them to move in. And I know that. I've seen it happen.
Well, What's valuable here in America is, and I guess a lot of other ethnic groups realize that that's the reason they flock to this country, so that they can come here and put up a business. We've been here for 400 years, and I think we're still the sleeping giant. If we ever wake up and truly get an entrepreneurial skill, it's like we've watched everybody else play Monopoly and we studied the game, but we're not ready to get in. But the truth is, once we get in and we study the rules, we got to learn the rules of the games that's being played before we even start playing it.
other ethnic group, they study the Constitution, they study America, they come in here ready, and whatever little bit of money that they have, they're ready to play the game. Even if the game means, as a black person, you got to go get a Jewish person to go buy that building. If that's how they're going to play you, then the key is get the building at all costs. We can fuss about I'm treated unfairly, y'all not selling to me, but you selling to him. But if the goal of the game is to win, I might have to go get him to come with me, sign the papers, get the building, go outside, get the papers back to me so I don't get put in checkmate. A lot of times we get frustrated, put our own selves in checkmate, or we give up and lose the game by forfeit. You know, when you're more powerful than the other team, but you don't even show up. And so you still lose. So we as Afro-American people, we just need to start showing up and ready to learn the rules to the game. So, my brother, I'd be willing to sit at your feet and learn everything I can learn about franchising. If you'd be willing to set up a class with Dr. Lee and I, and we can set that class where you can teach how to start small and grow your franchise or take your idea into a franchise, I'd be at the front of the line to get in that one of those seats, my brother.
Dr. Cannon, I agree we need to learn and know the game. But, you know, at the same time, when they bring these immigrants over here, just like they're doing right now with the Afghanistan, they're bringing them in, they ain't going to have to learn no game. They're going to give them cash money. They're going to set them up in an apartment or a condo way better than what our people are living who've been here forever. And they won't have to pay a dime for rent nor utilities. Then they're going to give them money to start up their businesses. I know what I'm talking about. Now, what do they do with the Haitians? They're flying them back out of here.
Dr. Lee,
but I still agree we need to know the game.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Not only that, we got to realize our ice is just as cold as theirs. And that's
absolutely
been the problem. We don't feel like our ice is just as cold as theirs. We feel like we got to have their ice in order for us to, you know, compete.
But see, I think, too, the advantages that we have, like, historical black colleges. We've got historical black churches all across the country. We've got to use what we have. When I went to the historical black college in Concord, North Carolina, I left home from San Diego, California. When I got there, I really wanted to be educated, and I appreciated the fact that they had a lot of sororities and fraternities and basketball, and they were trying to compete with other schools. But I wanted to come learn how I can get ahead. And I think if we turn our black institutions into institutional powerhouses, that when our kids come out, they're ready to do business. We got too many institutions, black churches. We got to turn those churches into institutions, studios where our young people can have voices. I think, Dr. Lee, you're right. Other immigrants are going to come here. They're going to be gifted, and they're going to be put in front of us if we stay asleep.
Whether we're asleep or awake.
We shouldn't be competing with them for jobs after being in this country for 400 years.
No.
We should have franchises like my brother. If he grows his franchise to 500 units, that's what I'm talking about. If during the Million Man March, if all of us black men would have left and went back to our cities with new ideals that we can franchise, if we would have created 500 new franchises doing the Black Lives Matter, and then like Ray Kroc start with one, 10 years later we got 500, now it's over 50,000. Brother, I think your ideal franchising is the key, and if we can franchise you teaching us that across the country, I think that will help all of us get a head start. I don't think we got our fair share of franchising in this country or that knowledge.
Absolutely.
How to grow from 1 to 10
from 10 to 500. I want to be in that class.
Hey, that's all it, what you just said, brother, is the key, is that we got to learn how to duplicate ourselves by trusting others to allow us to be duplicated.
Absolutely.
If I could,
we get the information and we sit on it rather than sharing it with the next brother to say, brother, I'm sure if something happened to me, I'm gonna give you what I know, just in case if anything happens, at least the ball and chain can continue to move down the field.
Yes, and
Dr. Lee, I wanted to
ask you a
question. Since you worked on the governmental side, and when it comes to giving out loans and getting money to people for them to start businesses and do stuff, are these Afghanistan or Afghani immigrants that are gonna come here? Are they gonna be stationed like immigrants usually are in black communities and their businesses as well? Is that what the current thinking is?
That's what's getting ready to happen.
Okay.
Of course.
Yes. Yes.
Well, if that does happen,
I can. Hey, that was a great, great. That was a great, great, great. What you just said, brother, is exactly what I see getting ready to happen. And where else would you put them?
Right. But the thing with that is, whether or not they succeed in the black community, that a large part is kind of depends on whether or not black people are selfish, so to speak, enough with their own dollar, because at the end of the day, they do need black people to fund their businesses. Like you have Arab people with gas stations. So if black people just like actually commit themselves to keeping their dollar in their own businesses and actually, you know, expressing some prejudice in their economic decisions the same way they do to us, they can't really thrive. So isn't that kind of on black people still to just be, like Jewish people, give preference
to
their own.
More intentional with our spending, in other words.
Well,
yeah,
we got to become more intentional
to be in group preference, to be honest.
Yes, exactly. And so what we have to do, though, we have to teach our people to do that. And we have to set their businesses up. And we're positioning ourselves, particularly with this expo, we're positioning ourselves to go into these cities and teach, make them aware of what is about to happen, okay? Uh-huh. And say, okay, for every restaurant, whatever they set up, we can help you set one up as well, because they're taking our dollars. And in order to be able to do this, this is why they bring them into our black neighborhoods. Now, I studied this. I worked right inside of it. It's because there's a certain amount of money that has been allocated for the low income for the black communities in business, period.
Uh-huh.
And so instead of that dollar coming to us, it's going to them. They're shipping the Haitians out, taking them back. They're the ones who really truly qualify. However, now what we have to do, this is why neighborhood commerce is so important. This is why the expo is so important, is so that we can position ourselves. We galvanize 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 black entrepreneurs.
Uh-huh.
These people are going to have to listen to us.
They
got to
pay attention. Absolutely.
We got 100,000 entrepreneurs who are affiliates,
committed,
who are a part of Neighborhood Commerce Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And Neighborhood Commerce Institute prepares that paperwork, every T cross, every I dotted, every gap bridge, every barrier eliminated, because we have professionals, we have management, we have accountants, we have CPAs, we got doctorates, we got HBCUs behind us. So we're qualified, extremely overly qualified. The paperwork is done right, because the paperwork is going to be done by yours truly, oversight, who has more than billions and billions of dollars of approved grant applications and funding applications. Now you let them tell me I done made a mistake. They're gonna have to give an account. How are you gonna approve this one over here that I wrote? Come on now.
This is amazing because see you have a lot of different people like my brother Donnie on the phone who has Pillar Insurance Group, and I've always asked Donnie, when are you gonna go into other markets? And you know, a lot of times we get, you know, we doing good in the market we in, we get comfortable with that market because we can be successful and just dominate the market that we in. But as far as scaling to go outside of the market and duplicate ourselves in other areas, that's not something a lot of folks are willing to do. And I can understand that because you figure the next person's not going to work my dream the same way I would work it. So I don't want to compromise my brand, so to speak, letting somebody else take the lead and do the same thing somewhere else. And that's kind of like the situation with most of us who start a business that's a ma and pa business. You know, we got to change the mindset of becoming ma and pa and realize that, you know, it's nothing wrong with duplication.
It's nothing wrong with duplication at all because that ma and pa gonna make more money when it's duplicated across this country. And so what I'm proposing to each and every single black aspiring or one in business already, let's eliminate the Asian hair stores, those nails, and all of that in our neighborhood, in our community, by doing it ourselves. For everyone that's set up, let's set up two and push them out.
I agree. You ain't said nothing wrong.
Because we can do it.
We're the ones that's keeping them in business, for sure.
Just like Michael just said, you know, we redirect the dollar. And it is not impossible to do. It's not impossible to do. We have the talent. We have the expertise in every area of work that we need, from medicine to popping popcorn, whatever. The security, we can secure our own communities. And here again, the CDCs, the Community Development Corporations, right in every single neighborhood, they won't even know how to reckon with us, period.
Miss Lee, what you're saying is definitely is what we're past due for everything you're saying. And I'm just saying it's, I guess back in the day when they created Black Wall Street, I don't think they asked for anybody's permission to do what they did.
Oh, heck you know. No, we're going to go back to Michael let Michael do some talking.
Thank you. I had something to add because I heard you were talking about what I said about, you know, controlling the circulation of the dollar and directing it to businesses that we actually, you know, or businesses that represent communities we actually want to enrich versus ones we're not trying to enrich. And I personally don't think we should be trying to enrich any other community other than our own for right now, because we have a lot of problems that need our own money's attention. And going back to some headlines that I had seen in the media, I know we're still in the, you know, the pandemic, but when that whole thing was at its peak and you saw all these headlines and there was some propaganda behind it about Asian businesses going out of business and, you know, being discriminated against unfairly, was kind of the propaganda they were using. They were saying people aren't going to Asian restaurants in particular, which is a big part of the Asian community's economic foundation. People aren't going to those restaurants because they think that increases the likelihood that they'll be exposed to the coronavirus, and that's so racist and all that stuff. And, you know, that's all propaganda. They call it racist. But the fact that inadvertently people being hesitant about going to those businesses, the people they're talking about really were black people because that's where most of the businesses are situated. The fact that had such an impact and they were talking about the impact of it. Obviously, they spun it their way, but, you know, in the media and CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, they were talking like, look, Asian businesses are suffering. The main reason they're suffering is just because black people, for a reason unrelated to black people wanting to keep their dollar in their community for, like, some conscious reason, like, inadvertently, them pulling out, just black people pulling out of their businesses caused them to start to go under. And, you know, I don't really see that as necessarily a bad thing because, you know, all groups fund their own businesses and will tell you that their people will specifically overlook a business that may be more convenient for them to do business with, like, let's say a restaurant. If they have to travel 5 minutes to a black restaurant that's high quality, they'll tell you that, no, they'd rather travel an hour to a Chinese restaurant. If they're Chinese, that's less quality, but that's still a restaurant owned by their people. So there's nothing wrong with that. I think we have to stress that we need to be in group preference, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that if people call you, especially a black person, they try to call you racist or bigoted for saying that you support black business, you should learn to kind of grow numb to that because that's just propaganda. Because we really do need to realize that when it comes to the success of any of these businesses that foreign nationals set up or immigrants, just, you know, speaking some harsh truth, if they flourish in your community, in your black community, and you have run down schools and your infrastructure is terrible and your business scene is pretty much non-existent in that community, it's Arabs and other people owning your gas stations, that is the community's fault, just plain and simple, because they need you to survive. Without you, they cannot subsist in your environment. And it's a mental thing, right? Like with black women who go to Asian nail salons or hair salons, it's a subconscious programming that they may not want to admit it. It doesn't really matter, but subconscious programming that tells them in their mind that a black woman's store isn't going to be as high quality, isn't going to have the newest and best products as this Asian woman's store, where in reality, just statistically speaking, these stores, Asian businesses, in particular Asian hair salons and Asian convenience stores that house a lot of hair products, are known to house some of the most cancerous mutagenic chemicals for, you know, hair treatment and shampoos and stuff like that on the market. So their subconscious mind is telling them one thing, but the data is actually telling them that these businesses are some of the least safe, lowest quality businesses to go into.
Right.
And I think in order to get around that mental programming, I really do think the key to all this is to do the opposite of basically what they've done. So they use programming. They use programming to degrade the perception of black business in our mind. I think we need people to, whoever has the skills to start collecting relatively recent exposés and stories in the media exposing the real side of these businesses. So we say, hey, look at this, watch this documentary we put together about the real state of Asian businesses in the black community and all we found about how many businesses are paying off health inspectors, how many hair salons are paying off these groups of people to keep quiet about people that got cancer from their products. We need to start showing black people their dirt because they'll make up dirt about us and show propaganda. We need to at least find truth that isn't propaganda and show black people the truth about these businesses. And I think that'll start to weaken that programming.
Let me ask you this. What about the concept of identifying businesses that we can start ourselves, kind of like what my brother's doing with the Black Wall Street card? You know, we know that everybody uses credit cards.
Right.
We know that everybody uses cellular communication. We need to start targeting, owning the businesses in which that are essential that everybody has to support. Just like she said, with Dr. Claude Anderson doing with the railway. You know, we got a more manufacturing type jobs where we can control our own bottom lines.
Right. I think that when it comes to, I think media is the most important thing here. I just do, just to be completely honest. Until black people subconsciously have doubt about believing that non-black businesses are superior to black businesses, I don't think they're really going to be motivated to put their money into a black business. I think we need to take back the minds of black people with like documentary exposés on the truth about Asian businesses and black communities and show the real, like the real, what's really going on, the quality of the restaurants, you know, the rats in the back of the kitchen. I think that until they see that, until they have doubt and a sufficient doubt in, non-black businesses, they're not really going to support black businesses.
I don't think that we have to put any energy into exposing what they're doing. I think, if anything, we should more so put the energy into exposing what we've actually been able to accomplish that they hid from us. You know,
that would be nice. I'd have to disagree with you on that, because a lot of black people, most people in general, I'm not going to put on black people, they primarily move off of convenience first, right? They're not going to go out of their way. If a grocery store is 5 minutes away from you and it has all the groceries you typically want, and there's another grocery store that you know is healthier, even if you know it's healthier, has healthier food, but it's 30 minutes away. You know, most people, they know they should eat healthier, but they're going to go to that grocery store that's 5 minutes away from them, unless they find out something like heinous about that grocery store, like, hey, there's a salmonella outbreak there. Then they're going to say, okay, you know what, this is worth me sacrificing my convenience. So even if you hear, like, you can hear a bunch of magnificent things about that 30 minute away healthy grocery store, like it's black owned and they accomplished this and they have the most of this kind of product. You can hear all these accomplishments, but if that store that's 5 minutes away from you, still 5 minutes away, 5 minutes versus 30 minutes, unless you hear something heinous about that store that's only 5 minutes away from you, you're not really, most people aren't going to be compelled to override their convenience.
I got you. I agree. I can agree with that. I can definitely agree with that.
And so as a people, I think it's just extremely important we establish, you know, if it's across the street from the nail shop, the Asian nail shop, you know, we established in our own neighborhoods. And so we haven't had access to information about funding, the truth about funding. How many of us know that disabled people on SSI and who've been laid off of their job for whatever reason, for medical reasons, or considered they, or recovering from alcohol or drug addiction, how many of us know that they can go to the federal government and just on the disability alone, no credit period come into the picture, and qualify for $30,000 to $200,000 to start up their own business? How many of us know that? And it will not even affect their SSI or their disability that they may be getting from their work, from their regular job, and for a minimum of 5 years until they establish themselves, and then they can get money from year to year to year. How many of us know that? In our neighborhood. Just imagine every ADD, every ADHD, every autistic, every Down syndrome. This is what they do. They get that money, establish a business. This individual with Down syndrome business is being run by a parent or a guardian. This is money that's available in our neighborhood. Imagine if every single individual who is disabled or diagnosed ADD, ADHD, get $30,000 in a community to start up a business, and we manage the businesses for them. What kind of change, economic change, with that one program
alone? That would create a major economic change. But like you said, that's the information.
Access.
That information
access,
is here. That's
access.
Not out there. That's it. Access.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Access. And then how to know how to develop that paperwork. That's what Neighborhood Commerce does, okay? We can change our community economically if we all just come together. And
let me ask you a question, Doc. Can I ask you a question, Dr. Lee? Are you familiar with the money that the Cherokee Nation and the Choctaw Nation has allotted to their freedmen slaves?
Somewhat, yes.
Okay. So
and I study that.
So in other words, every black person who has an ancestor that has Cherokee and Choctaw ancestry could qualify to receive tribal benefits.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that,
Okay.
And
Is it something that has been mass publicized or is it something that's just...
Absolutely not. None of this has been mass publicized. I know the culture of mine, where I've been and where I've worked. And, you know, just because of my profession and training that I've gone to, this is how I know. There's so much digging. They do so much. They put in so much effort to hide all of this information from us. When I say there's absolutely no way an ordinary person can learn this, absolutely no way. No way, because they will not make it available. And even though I know it, I've been working to help black people, to help us to go and get this money for disabled people. You have no idea how much fighting, and I know it's there, and I take it to them in black and white and still have to fight with these people. But so this is where we need 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 entrepreneurs affiliated as one. So when I go into Texas, all state offices and say, I've got 5,000 disabled people here on SSI and then those diagnosed ADD, ADHD, hey, we're about to turn this neighborhood around. We want this money that's available for them for businesses. Hey, they're going to have to, like, stop and say, okay, or else I know where to go in D.C. That's why I stay close to D.C., so that I can know I'll go directly to those state offices for on any one of these states. So my plea to my black people is to let's do this. Help Neighborhood Commerce, Dr. Lee, to get this Neighborhood Commerce established within these colleges, these HBCUs, for services so that we can teach them, train them, get all this information into our neighborhoods, into the CDC, so that the day I join my ancestors, this here will be here forever. And we can do it. We can do it. So let's let our other co-host, Dr. Tatum, come on in here.
Yeah, great conversation, Dr. Lee. This is very powerful, and many of us are trying to come together and to get this information disseminated. I remember the famous Amos chocolate chip cookie. This man in Los Angeles basically was almost like I think he was homeless, and he was able to take the famous Amos brand. He ended up selling it, but was able to do something with just simply with a chocolate chip cookie. So, and so many things.
Crab.
Yeah. So it's amazing.
No,
so.
I said, great story. The famous saying, great story.
Yeah.
Yes,
so I remember.
You guys.
Did you know
okay.
that, brother?
No, I don't know him, but by being a story from Los Angeles, I was really intrigued, you know, because I grew up in Chicago in the projects, and we came out to California in the 70s. And I know during that time, hearing that story and being in California, I was really taken back to see how if you really go forward and
try to do something, it can happen for you. You know, you just got to focus and just like with the what you guys are doing with doggy style hot dogs in Oklahoma. There's so many opportunities that we have now in America that we can take advantage of.
Well, you know, brother, speaking of Oklahoma and speaking of opportunities, I understand we have some kinship. You know, I had a cousin by the name of Renee Tatum out in Oklahoma reached out to me and told me that you were in Tatum not too long ago.
Amen. Amen. On Father's Day, I preached there. Tatum, Oklahoma, go back to L.B. Tatum, great-great uncle, and Doc Tatum, and they really came from El Dorado, Arkansas, after the Civil War. They just lived in Mississippi. That's part of my ancestry.
She was married to my great-grandmother was Mary Tatum.
Oh, praise God.
That was married to L.B.
Amen.
So that was a great grandfather. So that was the Jones side of the family married into the Tatum side of the family.
Amen. Praise God. Well, good to hear from each other.
Yeah, likewise, man. I was. I understand you also met Senator Connie Johnson. She told me she met you and told me.
Yes. We're going to support her. And unique thing about it, I'm going to be collaborating with Renee and some others on a book. We're going to write a book called Conflict of Interest, and I'm going to give you an idea. It's going to be a picture of a soldier. It's going to be a Confederate and a Union soldier. It's going to be a black face. Mm. Half face is going to be have a hat with the Union hat, and the other half is going to have a Confederate hat, and it's going to have a black face. It's going to be called Conflict of Interest because of L.B. Tatum's dad was Thomas Jefferson Tatum, who was a white
man. That's right. Well, hey, brother, it's interesting that you're talking about what you. I'm sitting on the script for the story of the City of Black Gold, right?
Okay.
And so, if you're familiar with Tatum, there was a movie done that disappeared.
Right. I know where the script is at, though. The script is in Los Angeles. It's Gene Archer Museum. The actual script, Black Gold, from the 20s, is actually housed in the Gene Archer Museum in Los Angeles.
That's right. I have a copy of the script.
Praise God.
And that's interesting that – so you know Uncle Buford.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Uncle Buford, he's 98 years old. I talked to him before I went to Tatum. I met we all got together in early, like, 1990s and 2000, talked with Renee because she's taking care of Buford now.
Excuse me, gentlemen. We have a guest on the line that I want to he has to go. His name is Mr. Greg Edwards, do you want to have a comment before you leave? Mr. Edwards, are you still there? Can you check to see if error code 330-4603 is open? Is that line open? Well, I wanted him to have something to say if he wanted to before he leaving, but I know he has to go now. Okay.
Is
so
Dr.
I'm
Landry
sorry.
On the phone?
No, he's not. We don't see Dr. Landry. But I'm so sorry, but Mr. Edwards, we're so glad that you were here tonight. And so we will go ahead. I do want to hear Donnie's voice again and Dr. Walker again. Are you gentlemen there?
This is Dr. Walker. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. All right. No, this has been very, very, very interesting and, I think we're living in a game-changing moment, very, very transformational in that people are motivated beyond measure to engage in the third leg of the civil rights movement, which is the economic justice movement. I think people are fed up. I think that corporate America have put up almost $50 billion to date, even though probably 70% of it is toward loans and to help them make money off of loaning money. They're putting up money. I think now we're at a point where if we can build the infrastructure to create generational wealth, the expo, exposing people, providing training and building this ecosystem, having a gateway, a portal, whereby we can support each other, there's no reason why we can't make critical progress. So I appreciate what you all are doing, and I think it's all right now, once we identify these vehicles, exposure is paramount.
You know, I definitely agree with what you just said, my brother Charles, and there's something else that I was wanting to say, Dr. Lee. It's sad that, you know, we have a lot of family members that we have out here that don't even know who family members are, you know, and that's one of the things that I've noticed about Oklahoma is that, you know, Oklahoma is one of those towns where you can meet somebody and you ask a last name, and once you get a last name, you can pretty much put a demographic in a place with it. I've never met Greg Lee, Tatum, the brother, Dr. Tatum on the phone, but I'm sure we'll get a chance to meet at some point in time, but it's definitely a pleasure meeting a relative by way of this interview.
Amen.
Yes,
that's what I think.
Yeah.
That's why I think opportunities, ladies and gentlemen, like this is so powerful. For us to be able to communicate, we've got people on this show, Dr. Lee's show, from all over the country, and to be able to bring each one of us in a little closer, even if we're just listening, but where you can open up your lines, hit one on your lines, and you can participate, you can take down numbers. Dr. King said that these tools have made us a neighborhood. Now it's up to us to use them to make a brotherhood out of us. He said, if we don't all learn to live together as brothers, then we're going to perish together as fools. The Bible says that we should love our enemies, and that's hard to do. But I think we can learn to love our families, and I think we can learn to reach out and use these tools, these radio shows, these podcasts, to bring our families in a little closer. Dr. Lee does a perfect, excellent show every Wednesday night. And if we begin to invite more people and we begin to let them know that they can be comfort in bringing their questions and their topics, then that's how we grow. We start with 35, then we go to 300 listeners, then 3,000 listeners, and we brand that. What we've been talking about tonight, we're actually doing with this show as we brand this show and other shows. The new frontier, y'all, is the internet, and we need to wake up and get involved because we can brand and create franchises over the internet. YouTube put out $22 billion last year for people who got content. So every time you put up a production, you're putting up a business on the internet. It's not just a video. It's not just a document. You're putting up a business. You're putting up a franchise that's going to make you money through the commercial value. So, y'all, this is the greatest time in history for us to be alive, to be excited, to be creative, to think out of the box, to tell our young men to pull up their pants and come on into this church and let's synergize, let's reason together. We got to get these pastors to open up these churches 7 days a week, turn some of them rooms into studios so these young kids can come in there and do their thing and do what they do and be supervised by great people. In San Diego, I had a young family member get killed this week and by another a young man. And, y'all, it's only 15,000 teenagers, black teenagers, teenagers in San Diego, 15,000, and it's over 1,400,000 people in San Diego, and we got 15,000 young black men, and we're killing each other. We got to cut that foolishness out. We got to get the churches open 7 days a week and let our young men know that they can feel comfortable. We've got to do that. We've got to bring good businessmen that know how to franchise a business and come in and teach these young men how they can start with one Subway. And then they can go to where they own 50 of them. That's incredible, y'all. Dr. Lee, this is an outstanding show. I'm even more motivated from hearing my brother talk about franchises, talk about the opportunities that we've been given. It's an incredible time, y'all. I appreciate the show.
You know we appreciate you, Dr. Cannon. Where's Donnie? Donnie, are you there? Okay. So, Donnie here? Okay, we want to hear more from Donnie in a moment. We will. We've got about 15 minutes or so left. Well, we've got about 17 minutes left. And so we're going to go back to Michael. And if you have more comments or questions or anything more, we have not had any questions. I mean, I wouldn't be able to see them anyway if there are any in the chat room. But because my power is still out. And so, Michael?
I didn't have any questions, but I guess before I, do my outro, I would say in-group preference is the most important thing, in my opinion, making sure that we are supporting our own businesses with our dollars, because at the end of the day, these different groups, as we articulated earlier in the discussion, like immigrant groups or foreign nationals, wherever they come from, China, Europe, Middle East, they usually set up shop in the black community first, and it's our dollar that kind of makes them and creates their foundation of wealth from which they can build and then go buy houses in the suburbs and then use that money to put their kids through college and all that other stuff. So I would just say that controlling our dollar, making sure that we support our own the same way other groups support their own, but maybe aren't open about it. We really, it's kind of ours to lose, right? With these Afghani immigrants coming in especially, it's really ours to screw up, because they're going to have to be made with our dollar, and that's dependent upon whether or not we're willing to give it to them. Their success is going to have to be made through our dollar, and that's kind of our responsibility, what we're going to do with it.
Right. Yeah, they're going to set them up, but we just got not to we're going to be ready to set ours up too and not patronize.
To fund our own.
Yes, fund our own. Yes.
And what you guys are saying is exactly the spirit that Black Wall Street brings to the table. Is it's time for it to stop asking and start doing.
That's right.
I feel as though we've been asking long enough. We've been marching. We done all that. So the only thing that's going to get their attention is economics. When they see us coming together, spending our money, creating our own manufacturing plants, our own cellular networks, our own media companies, that's the only way we're going to get an equal playing field, is we got to play on the same field in the game that they're playing on. And that's what you're talking about as far as creating our own credit unions, our own banks, you know, if we can, that's the page we got to get on, because we've been taught to put our money in their banks. We didn't realize that. And it goes back to what I was saying before. Why can't we have our own credit unions and our own banks?
There's no reason why we cannot, and we are.
So that way we don't have to ask them to give us anything. We can do it ourselves.
That's right.
You know, one of the things we say in our families, you know, I love him, but I don't mess with him. You know, that's my loved one. And what that means is that I'll take his money, but I'm not going to do business with him. And then when we look at the fact that, you know, you might come to my business, or you might do business with me, but can we do business together? Can we take our ideals, put our minds and our money together? A lot of times, even with our families, we say we love our family. We got good family members, but we're not doing any business with our families. We're not meeting on Saturday mornings and saying, what can we do together as a family that could put $1 million in our bank account in a year? So I guess what I'm saying is sometimes we might have to look around our families and say, where's the strength? Who can do the book work? Who can do the marketing? And just create something on purpose as a family. Write it down in a book as a family plan. This is our family plan of how we're going to creatively raise $1 million where it's going to be in the bank account 12 months from now. Together we do this as a family. A lot of times a man has 5 sons. His sons get 18 and they want to go into 5 different directions. On the slave plantation, if the father could have got his 5 sons working together, they become a lot stronger. In today's society, if we can get our families writing a book together, one book, and we push it together as a family, we can raise $1 million if we sell 100,000 copies together as a family. We write the book together as a family. We write hard. Even if it's grandma's cookbook, we write hard, y'all, and we put it in. And then we put it on the internet together as a family. And we see if we can sell 100,000 copies. And if we do that, then the important thing is the name of our second book, because if we proved it with the first, we open up a golden fried shrimp and waffles, and we put that golden fried shrimp and waffles in every city across the country. Black folk like shrimp. They like waffles, so we put a golden fried shrimp and waffles and see if we can't beat every other franchise. Like my brother said, if they can do it, then we can do it. There's thousands of ideas. But we got to come together. None of us is good as all of us. And what we cannot accomplish alone, we can accomplish it together, y'all. But we got to drop our rocks. We got to get rid of the fear of not just going into your business, but putting up a business together. We don't want just to have one business in the city. We want franchise rights so together we can put this business in every city across the country, like the Salvation Army and like the Goodwill. Well, we got a business in every city across the country, and we can do it with our families. In the Old Testament, them brothers set up tribes, and their tribes became great. But it started with the brothers and sisters, and they came together, and they worked that thing, and they became a nation, a tribe. And that's who we are, y'all. But it starts with our families. We got to go back and give love back to our brothers and sisters. They've hurt us. Maybe they didn't learn business. Maybe they didn't go to college. Maybe they did curse us out. But it's still got to be something that we can do together with our families to prove that we are business people. We are business-minded people. We can go from the bottom to the top. Plus, God's going to help us. He said he wants us to be the head and not the tail, above and not beneath. He wants us to lend and not borrow. And that's who we are as a people, Dr. Lee.
Thank you so very much. We're winding down. I want to let everyone know, certainly appreciate you all. And want Dr. Tatum to give your final thoughts for tonight. Again, we welcome, we missed you so much. We're happy that you're back. Know that you're still recovering. So certainly appreciate your, you know, making the sacrifice and coming on back tonight, even with your unexpected loss of your mom. Here again, my deepest condolences and prayers to you. So Dr. Tatum, and after Dr. Tatum, then we'll have Michael and our final voice tonight. Then we want to have, if Dr. Walker is still on, and then our final voice tonight will be Tony Fain.
Thank you, Dr. Standing show about the Wall Street Expo. That was great to have a tour of Oklahoma. Our exciting program, we celebrate black entrepreneurship. This is a show about 400 years entrepreneurship spirit with Dr. Mary Lee. We are so happy to have the president of the Nick Cannon Foundation, Nick Cannon's dad, James Cannon, who helped to be one of the greatest entrepreneurs, Nick Cannon, on Wildin' Out and Jim Hastinger, and also about to launch his new TV show. So he's a great example of African-American entrepreneurship. So we thank everybody. Thank you guys for your prayers. We'll continue to bring out excellent every Wednesday, and God bless you, Dr. Mary Lee.
Thank you. Thank you. Michael.
Yes. Once again, I want to thank all our guests listening for tuning in to this installment of Dr. Mary Lee Live. I also want to once again specifically thank the panel guests we have joining us for coming on to the show and sharing their experience in the industry of entrepreneurship and their insights and advice. We greatly appreciate that. I'm sure everyone listening does as well. And if you'd like to continue to support shows like this and, you know, keep us running, then, you know, continue joining in the conversation with us and listening in every Wednesday of every week. We try to do a show, keep promoting the show, keep frequenting the show, keep you know, attention on the show, listening in so that we can facilitate more substantive discussions like this and spread the word out to more of the community. So hopefully we can do this again next week. I know last week we had some troubles with setting this up. But, yeah, also a special thanks to Dr. Mary Lee for putting this whole thing together and, you know, the techs that help us literally put the thing together in a technical sense that, you know, work everything behind the scenes. Appreciate them. And, yeah, hopefully we can do this again next week and keep facilitating substantive conversations like this.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Michael. Our special guest, Tony Fain, do you want to wrap us up tonight?
Well, yes, Dr. Lee. I'd like to definitely let everybody know that Black Wall Street is going to be an event to where we want everybody to feel as though they are welcome. We're not just going for black folks. We want people that are people who support black businesses and want to see black businesses succeed. But also, mm-hmm. I like to make sure that we give everybody who have products and services an opportunity to come out and showcase their product and services, and to also get information and to get enlightened on a lot of the information that's been hid from us for years that's not being taught in schools, that's not regular conversation that we would run across in terms of how to go about establishing business credit, how to go about getting business funding, because sometimes it's not about just starting a business, but a lot of times it's about getting the proper funding to help grow a business. And that's, I think that's really what most people probably have a hard time doing is not the problem of starting, it's sustaining. And we just need to know where that help is at, to where we can actually go out and get the resources that, you know, Dr. Lee, in terms of getting the proper grants identifying funding sources so that way when we do start these businesses, when we run into difficult times like COVID and situations that we don't anticipate, we can weather those storms.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of what, you know, I'm hoping that this expo accomplishes is for people to at least, for people that want to start a business, has always been nervous to do it, to get the courage to go ahead and, you know, pursue your dream. You know, we have nothing to lose and everything to gain at this point. And like you said, I feel like if I can do it, you know, anybody can do it because it's just how bad we want it.
That's right.
And I'm willing to
share. So where can people find information about the expo at?
Well, you can go to the BlackWallStreetExpo.org, and we are 501c3. And we are also looking to, with this expo, our goal is to not only generate interest, but to also to be able to help fund and support and create other businesses. So that's really what our goal is, to not only just expose, but also to be able to invest in and to start some other businesses. So, you know, we're wanting everybody who has the interest of starting a business to come out, and everyone who has a business to also participate in terms of marketing your business. So we're just looking forward to bringing this event to Oklahoma, keeping the spirit of Black Wall Street alive, and you know, just paying homage to the people that lost lives and lost businesses and everything that they own as a result of for us to do what we're doing today. So that's kind of like the goal, is to just keep that spirit alive and to let everybody know around the country that if they did it once, we can do it again.
The first expo was
right.
Kicked off. What date was that?
October the 22nd, the 23rd, and the 24th. It's going to be a three-day weekend, and we're going to have workshops as well as entertainment. So in the day portion, we have what's called the Vendors Village, and we also going to have a food truck park. We'll have a lot of minority companies that have different product lines, different food brands, so we have a food truck village, and we'll also have what's called Vendor Village, which will be a lot of exhibitors, people selling black art, you know, merchandise and trinkets and whatnot. So, you know, it's going to be a real exciting weekend. Hopefully we can do a lot of trading and a lot of supporting the black businesses and a lot of networking. That's really what it's about, is everybody coming together, networking, doing business together.
Well, you know, one of the things we were really excited about, Dr. Tatum and I and Dr. Lee, and what we talked about is, and if any way we can incorporate, you know, working a speaking bureau where we can teach our people how to get on the speaking circuit, where we can groom them, where even our entertainers can be a part of the largest Afro-American speaking bureau in the country, where corporations will have to come to us, as well as, you know, branding a publishing company like Chicken Soup for the Soul. We wrap up with the idea of 400 years of greatness, where our people can speak on the subject of 400 years of greatness, and we can jumpstart their speaking career. But then they also can write their books on 400 years of greatness. We're talking about the 400 years of lynching that's taking place. There's some great folk that came out of that because we still survived the 400 years of massacres that's taken place. If we write about those, then we can publish publications together that can become marketable. So from that expo, I would love to come in, not to sightsee, but for the purpose of helping people meet with the publishers in your city. What does it take to set a publishing company in every church? What does it take to set an internet radio show in every church in Tulsa? Uh-huh. So now we got a voice. If we can literally, like you said, plant some businesses that can go national, I think a speaking bureau would do that, And I think a powerful publishing companies where we all can learn together and begin to publish our books over the internet and grow together, that's what I would like to come and work along with all of y'all as well. With what we're
brother,
doing.
I would love to have that as a part of what we're doing. And that's really what this is about, is creating like minds, people that want to educate and give something back, because, you know, the people that do know need to share with the ones that don't know. And that's been one of my main objects. That's been one of my main things as a kid. I've never been a person who's been selfish with information.
Well,
and that's what we do as black folks.
Loud and clear. Yeah, we plan to be there loud and clear with neighborhood commerce, and we'll be able to do, you know, set up all of those things. And one thing that we are hoping to maybe do, we talked about it well, Dr. Cannon and I and Dr. Tatum, we talked about doing the expo, doing a Dr. Mary Lee live show, live right there at the expo. I don't know if we could do that or not, but that would be something that we have kind of talked about. And but we'd have to talk with Tony about this.
You're moving in the direction in which I want this expo to go. One thing about me is that I'm a person who believes in staying in my lane.
Mm-hmm.
And my lane is I've always been in the entertainment industry. I feel as though. Mm-hmm. To go with the expo, we're going to bring in a great show for the weekend. So as far as, I like to partner with people like yourself who's able to bring infrastructure and to bring in great speakers like Dr. Tatum and Brother Cannon and whatnot. So that way we can bring more than just the entertainment and the vendor village and the workshops to the people. So I'm definitely glad that we had an opportunity to meet, because the community development piece was a very strong piece that I was looking for. And I see that's what you bring to the table. I had no idea that, you know, what I was looking for was in front of me.
Right at the table.
But that's what you bring the other piece that we were missing for the expo, and that's that whole economic development piece.
Amen.
We're so grateful. Do we have Donnie here? Okay, I think maybe
Donnie might have died off.
Okay.
Donnie is definitely on. You know, like you said, Donnie is part. We have a company called the Dreamwood Group Ad Agency, and we're going to definitely be engaged. And I don't know if you really knew a lot about my boy Donnie, but Donnie is someone who's very low key. His mom is someone that I really, really pay homage to. She's going to be a part of our Legacy Award ceremony because without Maxine Horner, Black Wall Street would not have the national footprint that it has.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, she passed this year, and I really hate that she's not able to see what we're able to, you know, get accomplished as far as keeping the legacy alive. But with Donnie being here, I feel as though he's able to continue his mom's journey.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly looking forward to it, and continuing throughout the country. I want to extend our thanks to our listening audience and those who've been supporting us for almost 2 years. Not quite 2 years, but we're getting close. But we've got people who have not missed a show. If they did, they went back and they listened, and all of these will eventually be on YouTube, on our websites, and I just want you to know that I appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I want to extend appreciation to our co-hosts, Dr. Canna, Dr. Tatum. Welcome back. Michael has been just so faithful, and, you know, our tech support behind the scene, and who's always here for us, family, who's always here for us, friends, who's always here for us. And here again, I want to thank our special guests, you know, all of you who've been here, Dr. Tony Landry in his absence, Dr. Walker and Donnie, you all have been great. I appreciate you. I love you. I want you all to stay safe. And until next week and until we talk again, this is Dr. Mary Lee Live. Until next week, we love you and appreciate you. Good night.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Came from the bottom, ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars. But you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Case scenario, might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the road is still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you?